507, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Cruz.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Well, hello there, Todd. How are you today?
Doing just fine. And as usual, enjoying my afternoon reading an occasional accident report. And today it's a little bit different. We actually have an NTSB advisory that has some surprising things behind it.
It was really, it was quite surprising. And the detail is just unusually high.
So, well, some of the audience might have actually seen the recent preliminary report that came out about an event that happened in October of 2025. This was in Bath, Michigan. It was a Hawker 800 XP that had been through quite a bit of maintenance. And after the maintenance was over, it was going to, there's going to be a requirement from the manufacturer to do a test of the stall system, the stall warning system. And, you know, I'm getting ahead of myself. We're going straight into the business of the day without first thanking our members out there who've joined as members of Flight Safety Detectives. We appreciate every one of you all who do that. And we'd like to see more of you do that, getting special access to shows earlier than everyone else, as well as other goodies to be named later. And, of course, to our potential sponsors out there, we'd like to invite you as well to get in touch with us at fsdsponsors@gmail.com. As I said before, it was a Hawker 800 XP that was in a test flight after maintenance. The situation was there was a requirement to test the stall system. Without going into great detail, because I'm not qualified to fly this airplane, but just going by what the NTSB described as the system, what you have is a combination of a stick shaker and a stick pusher. A few knots before the initiation of the stall, the stick shaker activates. And if you don't respond before it actually begins the stall, you have a stick pusher that automatically pushes the nose down to increase airspeed and avoid the stall. And in the operating manual, the manufacturer stated, in essence, if you get into a stall situation and you start having issues with rolling one way or the other, you should be able to recover from that using aileron. Well, in this particular case, things didn't work out as expected. The airplane had been in maintenance for several months, and the two pilots who were flying the test flight, not the test flight, the flight to evaluate the stall system, had been the primary pilots with this aircraft. They'd flown this aircraft quite a bit. They'd even gotten some training several months before in that model to reacquaint themselves with the systems of the aircraft. The maintenance operator basically said, look, here are a list of pilots that we recommend that could fly this flight for you. Because, again, when you in a high-performance airplane that might get into a stall, and as was the case with these two pilots, you don't have any experience actually stalling this aircraft or even being qualified to have been trained to do so in a simulator, it makes sense to have someone else do it. They could not find anybody to do the flight. They chose to do the flight themselves. Now, for those of you who might remember an episode from last year, which we're flashing a picture of it up on the screen for those of you watching the video version of it, there was a similar accident to this similar general model of a Hawker aircraft that happened in Grand Junction, near Grand Junction, Colorado. And we sort of admonished the flight crew for, why are they doing this? This is a fairly intense maneuver they're doing, testing this autopilot, this stall system. Why didn't they have somebody more expert do it? Well, come to find out, and this gets into the core of our show later on, the NTSB realized that there was a problem not just with this event that happened in Bath, Michigan, or the one that happened last year in, actually, they took off from Grand Junction. They crashed in Westwater, Utah. The manufacturer basically said in their manual, it's okay for people who know how to fly the airplane, who don't have specific training for dealing with stalls, to do the stall test. This was a fatal event in 2024 in Westwater, Utah. Another fatal event, 2025, in Bath, Michigan. There had been other events that the NTSB was aware of, including a flight back in 2006 with production test pilots, where they got into a serious stall situation testing the stall system. They were able to recover. But the NTSB, and we can get into this in a moment, they came out with an advisory on January 2nd this year, saying, this is an advisory for all aircraft that are of this model. There are approximately 664 of the specific model that they had the advisory about, saying basically, there are some issues with the manual. It should be updated to have much more specific requirements for how this kind of test can be conducted, because they had seen at least two fatal events, which we just mentioned, other events involving this aircraft. And not only are the 664 in the advisory affected, but any aircraft that was under this type certificate, almost 1,200 in active service around the world, might be affected, and this could apply to them. And, you know, this is where I'd have to defer to your expertise. The Hawker has been around for a long time, since the 1960s, in various forms. How often have you ever done any sort of investigations of issues dealing with this aircraft in the past?
Well, other than the few that we see here, it's, you know, it is a rare event. You know, the first thing that jumps out to me when I look at the report is every flight you have to pre-plan. Do these guys be so cocky sure of themselves that they felt like they could stall this airplane? Have they ever done it before, which we don't believe they did, or the government, NTSB, doesn't believe they did? And, you know, why take the risk? You know, we're supposed to be in the business of mitigating risks, not take it. And in fact, I could even go further back and criticize these guys, because this airplane was in maintenance for a long time. You mean you didn't know that when it comes out of maintenance that you're going to need to do a series of test flight activities on them from the first flight? You know, that calls a big question mark over the quality of their pre-flight thinking.
And this is one of those situations where the manufacturer and the FAA, until the advisory came out, of course, basically gave people that option. That is, there was no specific requirement that they have specific training and mastery of that training with recovering from a stall. The implication was, if you're qualified, certified to fly this aircraft as pilot in command and second in command, you're certified to do the stall test. And the instructions were general as to what had to be done. One of the key instructions was you can't do this with any sort of icing on the wing, because the wing is fairly sensitive to that. In fact, the 2006 event by the production test pilots, which was mentioned by the NTSB, the flight crew was aware of icing. There were folks in the back, maintenance people in the back, who basically said to the pilots, there's some icing on the inboard part of the wing. The pilots from the cockpit could not see the inboard part of the wing, but they did hear from the back, they have icing there. Yet they decided to go ahead with the stall test, and they got into a fairly serious situation where the airplane started rolling off into a stall 11 knots above the expected stick shaker speed. So basically, in this 2006 event, ideally,
that was that they had more than just a little ice.
Evidently, instead of getting a warning several knots above stall speed of a stick shaker plus a stick pusher kicking in, it went right into stall.
Yeah, with the decision making big time in the very beginning of this, you know, it hits the pre-flight that I'm always preaching about. You know what you're going to do, know the weather, you know, where you are, where you're going, and everything in between. I mean, it's just, it's, and this last one, the 2025 report, it certainly doesn't hold back on talking about the decision making and what the pilots failed to do. Now, it's easy for us to sit here and blame the pilots, but in this case, and I don't like to do that, but in this case, it's pretty clear that these pilots were attempting to do something that they were maybe less than familiar with, or less than the required familiarization.
Now, in the Bath, Michigan event, the most recent event, there was something in there in the pilot operating manual that would have might cause the average pilot a little bit of hesitation. It says, and I quote from the NTSB preliminary report, "The stall test section of the pilot operating manual also noted stall characteristics and stated there's no natural stall warning or aerodynamic buffet prior to the stall. It is acceptable for the stick pusher operation to be coincident with the natural stall, provided that any rolling tendency can be restrained within 20 degrees bank angle by normal use of ailerons. In the three events we mentioned, the one in Bath, Michigan, and two earlier ones, it went well beyond the 20 degrees bank. And in fact, there were, in at least one of these cases, it was like a flat spin before it hit the ground. Another case, it rolled several times on the way down. So this is something that is, even in a training aircraft, would be well beyond your experience. And we're talking about a high-performance jet aircraft. Let me back away from the specifics of the aircraft and talk about where this aircraft is being used. As we stated, there's over 1,000 of them out there. They have military and civilian use, corporate use, and it's in, has been used successfully all around the world. And this would cause any operator of this aircraft some concern if they found out that here's a situation with their aircraft. And although there's going to be instructions and updates to the manuals, it may cause them to change what their procedures are going forward right now.
So one of the cautions in the manual, it says pilots conducting stall checks should have prior experience in performing stalls in the Hawker and must be prepared for unacceptable stall behavior at any point leading up and throughout the maneuver. Now, in the 2006 accident, we clearly see that they were quickly overtaken, even though they were experienced pilots. They were quickly overtaken by the stall, and they actually did six rolls, five, six total times the aircraft rolled over, but they were able to recover it. And I don't recall what their altitude was when they were performing the stall maneuver, but they obviously had enough altitude to enable themselves to recover. And but here we have two low experience guys, or maybe no experience, in stall, performing this stall test, and they quickly get in over and end up killing themselves. Hello, aviation enthusiasts, safety professionals, and curious minds. Welcome to Flight Safety Detectives. We are thrilled that you dropped by. Here, we dive deep into the world of aviation safety. From incident investigations and technical analysis to lessons learned and what they mean for safer skies. As a member of our channel, you get exclusive member-only perks, first access to new episodes, live stream discussions, and Q&A sessions. We are a community of fellow safety detectives
who love aviation as much as you do. If you're passionate about aviation or just curious about how things work, we'd love to have you on board. Hit join, ring the bell to be notified, and jump into the discussions in the comments. Strap in, because together we're going to explore aviation safety like never before.
You know, when I was reading through this, full disclosure, I'm not qualified to fly anything that's sophisticated, not multi-engine, and certainly not type rating on a jet like this. But the idea of me as a pilot doing some sort of tests in flight, sure, I've done VOR checks and such, but to do something more sophisticated, or, as I've discussed before, to fly an airplane the first time out of serious maintenance, that's not something I'm comfortable doing. And if I knew that an airplane had been through some serious maintenance, or even somewhat serious maintenance, my first question is, okay, who's flown this airplane before me? And were they just regular pilots, or did they check it out to make sure it's completely functional? Because I don't own an aircraft. I have a flying club where I rent the aircraft from them, and I have to have faith that the maintenance that's being done on them is up to par, and that the people who haven't rented it ahead of me haven't dinged the aircraft and not told me about it. So I'm very sensitive about things that have just been fixed. You know, this is a more complicated show than we usually do on one level, in that there are actually three accidents involved here, two where there have been a final report and one that's still in the preliminary stage. And we have an advisory put out by the NTSB, which has connected to it seven different recommendations. And although there are over 1,000 of these aircraft in service around the world, not every pilot out there or every aircraft operator out there is operating this aircraft. So the natural question might be, okay, this might be an interesting thing, but what does that have to do with what I'm doing? Well, I think it may have something to do with what you're doing, depending on what you are doing. If you are operating an aircraft or more, and they're going into maintenance, and there are requirements that the aircraft has to go through before it could be put back in service, well, ask yourself, does anything sound a little bit dicey about these requirements? Are they not strict enough, or they don't make sense to me, or am I nervous either having myself or having somebody else do these requirements before the aircraft goes into service? If the answer to any of those questions are yes, well, sit down and have a conversation with yourself.
Well, you know, so I'm a maintainer, and I've been around airplanes that have come out of heavy maintenance visit for a long time. And one of the things that I noticed over my career is, first off, most airlines, most operators do not let their line pilots do the very unusual first flight out of maintenance because of all the previous problems they have had. And I know of some airlines on commercial aircraft that have pages and pages and pages of items to check before that first flight, before the airplane, oftentimes before it comes out of the hangar. And all too often, people being people will just jump in the airplane and check things and go. I've told the story here on this channel, on our channel before, about I used to oftentimes go recover airplanes out of maintenance, particularly because I wanted to fly them. It was a 91 flight, and I wanted to fly the airplane. And one particular time we went up, and I noticed that the work package on this particular airplane was a half an inch thick. And I went over and looked at it, and there was extensive work done on the airplane, extensive. And I just sat back, and I watched the first officer do an inspection, and it wasn't what I would call very thorough. And I went over and I questioned the first officer when that person happened to be looking in one of the open panels into a hydraulic area. And I asked, "What are you looking for?" And the answer was, "I don't know. I'm just looking in to see something, if everything, it's obvious something going wrong. So I had a little tutorial about hydraulics, what you should be looking for. You know, is there fluid leaking? Is it, you know, just in general looking, because you're not going to do anything, but it's just a very detailed look. Especially coming out of maintenance, it should be a very detailed look. Anyway, we got through that, and the airplane was pushed outside. I watched the, who happened to be the director of operations, he came out with the logbook and all the paperwork, come up in the airplane, got in the seat, and they were getting ready to haul up the stairs. And I said, okay, hold it. Did you check the flight controls? And they said, yes. I said, how did you check them? Well, the captain said he moved, you know, rolled the ailerons and pushed the rudder pedals and pulled the yoke back and forth. I said, were either one of you outside making sure that they went in the direction that they were supposed to? And it got quiet in the cockpit. Right? There's all sorts of things like that that have to be done. People make mistakes. Mechanics can make mistakes. And you have to check things, especially when I looked at the work that was done on the airplane. As I said, the quantity of work, very easy for it to get in trouble. How do we get in trouble? You know, sometimes a mechanic will work on the flight controls, and I actually had this on one night at work. A mechanic will work on the system. Everything's done, buttoned up. But along came another guy who had a task to do in the pedestal, on the floor under the pedestal, and the cables were in the way, so he moved the cables and got it off a pulley, and it didn't get put back on the pulley. It so happened that we caught that before departure by inadvertently because of another check that someone else had done. Right? But it's very, very easy in this major maintenance visits, and this one was out of service for months. It's very, very easy for things to get missed. And, you know, you really got to pay attention. When I look at an accident like this, it bothers me because there was a number of places where this should have, these particular individuals should have said, whoa, you know what, hang on. And the first one was they had plenty of time beforehand to get a properly qualified crew in there to fly this airplane instead of taking it on themselves to fly it, because now they're gone, the airplane's gone. So it's just painful to see accidents like this.
And on that particular one, the one that was in Bath, Michigan, where they had a list of pilots to fly, but they said, we can't arrange for it. This happened to be an airplane that was operated by a company out of Mexico. These were both pilots based in Mexico, and although the report didn't go into it, they're up in Michigan dealing with returning this aircraft from service. So there might be some time pressure on them where, again, stepping back from this after the fact, it's like, well, gee, they should not be under time pressure to do this. If it takes them a couple extra days to get somebody to fly, the company should be okay with it. Well, the reality is the company might not be okay with it. So that brings into question your preparation. If you know that your operator, I'm not saying it would happen in this case, but let's say you're working with a company and you know that they get, let's just say, upset if there's any sort of delay because of your concern for safety or the risk of the particular flight. Well, that should be a warning sign. I'm not saying you should quit the job or anything, but if you see that happening in your organization, it might be time to speak up about it, whether it's in an anonymous safety reporting system within the company or through some other means. Because this is the sort of thing where it seems to be an innocent decision right now. Oh, we'll just go do this, even though we don't have full qualifications, because it'll be days before we can get somebody who has the actual qualifications. And I think I'm okay with it. Well, maybe you are, maybe you aren't. But don't fool yourself. And I had a flashback a minute ago when you were talking, where some time ago I was going to go out with my instructor, went out to the airplane, went to inspect it, and the nose wheel tire was flat. Nothing fantastic. We got it over to maintenance. They changed the tire on it. We ended up doing a classroom study that day instead of flying. But looking back on that now, If I were to rent that same airplane later, my first question would be, did somebody else fly this before me? Because if someone else has flown it, it's had at least one landing where the wheel didn't fall off, or there's any other problem manifesting itself, I'd feel a lot better about that than if I were the first person to fly it after that tire got changed. And tire's not sophisticated technology, but still, things can go wrong.
Hey, we've had people make mistakes. And this, I remember there's an airliner, two different manufacturers of airlines where the inner bearing, the wheels are very similar, but the inner bearings are different. And they got mixed up. So the wheel was the right wheel for the airplane, but the inner bearing was the wrong one. Fits on the axle fine. A couple landings later, the wheel leaves the airplane. Because it all the bearing fails and breaks up, and the wheel goes right over the axle nut because the bearing has disintegrated. So it's just you got to pay attention. That's why I harp over and over on the pre-planning your flight. So if they had done a good job of pre-planning this flight, they could have had the crew there, made arrangements for the crew weeks ahead to come up. So there was poor coordination from the company. And these guys probably didn't have any knowledge of it, even though they fly this airplane and often somebody within the organization for the company probably made all the arrangements and they weren't in the loop. And they probably traveled up to Michigan just assuming that all that was done and got a surprise. Been there, done that myself. So, and you got to pause. Are we qualified to do this stall test? And I'm sure they didn't do any sort of a search. In maintenance, I promote all the time the ability to go back and look at see where people had problems before in whatever job you're doing. And we don't do it all the time, but some guys do. Right, so the information is out there. You just have to dig for a few minutes to find it. But it just it's frustrating. I'm sitting here and I'm just frustrated because we had two people perish because of bad decision making.
That's a perfect segue into what I was thinking about for our second to last word. Like what you just said, decision making. We have the luxury here of having the NTSB point out a very specific deficit that happened with the documentation for a series of aircraft. Happens to be over 1,000 around the world, and it's a lot of aircraft, but let's just say drop in the bucket of the total aircraft that are out there. But the lessons that we're taking away from this just by discussing it is something that applies no matter what you're flying. If you have something that has issues, even if that issue just came out of maintenance, you would think, well, just came out of maintenance, everything's perfect. Well, maybe. But things might not be perfect enough for your purposes. And if you're not qualified, or don't have the experience, or don't feel comfortable with taking on this aircraft after it comes out of maintenance, don't do it. That's my second to last word. Your decision in the field as an individual, maintainer, pilot, dispatcher, what have you, could have very positive effects on people who don't get hurt.
Yeah, stalling a swept-wing airplane is not for the faint of heart, that's for sure. Stalling any airplane. Although back when I learned to fly, Orville used to have us, I'm going to get ahead of you because I know you're going to say it like Greg does. My instructor, every time we went up, we did a stall. And if recovery, stall recovery. So we didn't get into the full stall, but we stalled the airplane. It fell, the wing fell off, and I had to recover from it. So, and if nothing else, that made me not uncomfortable with if a stall happened that I would know how to respond to it. But in swept wing airplanes, it's a little bit of a different story. You stall it off. But anyway, we're going to include the 19-page document that talks about the training needs and what you need to perform this stall on this particular Hawker airplane. And I would advise anybody who flies Hawkers, if you're listening to us, to please take a look at it. It's called Establishing Pilot Training and Experience Qualification Criteria for the STAL Test Program. Right, so it's that specialized that they're going to now finally do some specialized training. But the airplane's out of production. It's going to be a problem with the people that operate these airplanes. In fact, a friend of mine owns one of these. I will make sure that this documentation is left on their airplane in their cockpit and let them read it. So the last word, as always, pre-plan, pre-plan, pre-plan. If these folks had pre-planned their accident, they wouldn't have flown that day. They would have been waiting in for somebody that was experienced to come out and perform the stall check. However, they didn't. But please, if you're going to go flying, do a good job of pre-planning before you get to the airport. Because human beings being what we are, when you get to the airport, you already cranked yourself up mentally to go flying. That's why I ask you to do it at home, because you don't have that self-imposed, I want to go flying mentality on your shoulders just yet. If you do it at home and it's okay, when you get to the airport, you do it again. If they agree, good. If they don't agree, stop and find out why. The other thing that we have a lot of, still have a lot of, is pre-flights that need to be more robust than most of them that are done today. So if you're going to fly, learn how to do a good pre-flight. If you don't, or if you either you don't think you're doing a good one, or if you're just concerned that you might not be doing a good one, get a mechanic to come out and have them walk you around the airplane. Mechanics look at the airplane differently than pilots do. And pilots could be well advised to take some of the way maintenance looks at their airplanes to heart. And after you get in the airplane and get in the air, please put that head on a swivel, because we have so many new people out there, just more and more of them. And even though the shortage has slowed down, the flight schools are still pushing them out pretty good. So if you're in an area where they get student pilots of any kind, make sure you've got your head on a swivel to make sure you have don't want to get involved in their accident. Right, so they're learning. They're going to make mistakes. You don't want to be close enough to be sucked into it. And please, please fly safely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetodetexas@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
For decades, Avemco Insurance Company has been an advocate for pilot safety by promoting and sponsoring continuous pilot training and education. One of their initiatives has been to reward pilots who actively participate in being more proficient with savings on their insurance premium through the Avemco Safety Rewards Program. Pilots save by earning new ratings, getting recurrent training, participating in the Fast Team Wing program, and listening to podcasts like ours and other Avemco-related courses and training. Call 888-879-0389 for a free quote or visit avemco.com/flightsafety. Don't forget to tell them the Flight Safety Detective sent you for an automatic 5% off.